Charles was also very sensitive to the importance of extending the ecclesiastical hierarchy. In other words, moving the structure of archbishops with bishops under them, the territorial structure of the church, into new areas. For example, and in particular, in the lands east of the Rhine, the lands that we would think of today as Germany, from Saxony right in the north to Bavaria in the south. Charles saw here that long before he actually had institutional structures in those areas, and as a complement to, as a preparation for, or as a follow-up after his military advances in these realms, church organization would serve him very well indeed. But he also seems quite genuinely to believe that extending church organization and bringing more and more people into the church was in and of itself a good thing. Charles was sort of doing good and doing well simultaneously. Now, Charles also had a certain tidiness of mind, a certain desire that within his vast realms, certain things should be done in the same way by people everywhere. So, for instance, he turned to Rome. Again, we see our connections to Rome. He turned to Rome and he asked the Pope, Hadrian I, his great friend, for a copy of the canon law, the law of the church, then applied in Rome. A book was sent north. It was studied for a period of time by Frankish scholars. It was amended and adapted in certain ways to suit the Frankish situation. And then in the year 789, it was applied widely throughout the Frankish world. Charles observed that all through his realm, people worshipped in slightly different ways. He turned again to Rome, and he asked for a copy of a sacramentary, a bishop's book, a mass book, the orders for service of for the worship services in the church. He asked for a book to be sent to him. Again, it came from Pope Hadrian I. He got this probably 785, 786. This came into his realm, was studied by Frankish scholars, and then implemented through much of the Frankish world. Charles did other things. I mean, he sent to Rome. He noticed that monasteries, for example, followed a variety of different practices. So he wrote to the Pope and said, send me a copy of the Rule of St. Benedict. The Franks had probably been influenced by the Anglo-Saxons to privilege the Rule of St. Benedict. He said, send me a copy of the Rule of St. Benedict. He brought it into court. His scholars studied it, and then he implemented it. He said, all right, the monasteries of the realm should all follow the Rule of St. Benedict. What we can see here is the creation of a very firm foundation for a common cultural life in much of what we think of as Western Europe. Now, the imperial coronation of Charlemagne is one of the signal events in Western civilization. It's an event that in many respects is kind of hard to understand in its own context, hard to gauge exactly what its long-term consequences were. Suffice it to say, though, it was particularly important. Well, let's say what happened, and then see if we can describe why it was important. It was in the first place immediately occasioned by problems in papal Rome. As the popes had increasingly been taking over leadership of a state, the papal states, which we mentioned in an earlier lecture, they began to suffer political, social, economic, and other kinds of strife, stress, tension in the city. Things had gotten rather bad for Pope Leo III. He was actually attacked by a mob in a Roman street. He appealed to Charles. Charles has to go to Rome. It's when Charles goes to Rome in 800 to sort of adjudicate this awful situation in Rome that he is crowned emperor. But it's also important to say that Charles's coronation was prepared by the emerging idea of a universal, imperial, hegemonic tradition in Francia. Charles and all those scholars around him had been thinking about single rulers, had been thinking about empire, had been thinking about Rome. So when Charles goes to Rome, and when he is crowned by the Pope, now, Charles's biographer Einhard tells us that if Charles had known what was going to happen that day, that is to say, on Christmas Day in the year 800 in St. Peter's Basilica before the high altar, when Pope Leo III, as Charles was praying, came up behind him and placed a crown on his head, and the gathered Roman people acclaimed him as emperor, Einhard, Charles's biographer, tells us if Charles had known what was going to happen that day, he wouldn't have gone to church even though it was Christmas. Well, that might be just sort of an effusive modesty, but it might be something else. It might also be the case that what Einhard is telling us is Charles didn't really want to be made emperor by the Pope. He didn't want to be acclaimed by the Romans, that he saw his empire in slightly different terms. What kind of terms? Well, Frankish writers begin to talk of the Franks as a new Israel, as a new chosen people. And we remember that, I mentioned this a little while ago, that Einhard tells us that Charles's favorite book was Augustine's City of God. Charles's court theologians rather artfully manipulated Augustine's political philosophy to create what we can call political Augustinism. Now, Augustine, you'll remember, had talked about the city of God and the city of man. The city of man, the sinful realm of people on earth. The city of God, all those redeemed. And that the march of history was linear, and eventually the city of God would redeem the city of man. Now, Augustine resolutely refused to identify the city of God with any realm on earth. Not the Roman Empire, not any empire that ever had existed. To the Carolingians, their realm was in some way the city of God. And Charles was its anointed leader.